C2SP. Number 10B.
Our experience has been, and you may make the same experience, and you may have the same question, that when one was reading the practice book of John Dolley, in which he actually explains the chapter on practice in the textbook and shows the structure of it, but gives always that method of treatment, then the students come around and say, oh yes, I've seen that Dolley always says we must see a specific truth about a specific error. Now tell me, what is the specific truth in my case? See, this is a wrong question. It's absolutely a wrong question. It starts at the end instead of at the beginning. So they always come around and ring up and say, I have this and this. Please tell me, what is now the specific truth about it? Well, nobody knows that. Only the divine mind knows it. Therefore, the question is wrong. The question would be not to ring up, but to sit down and go through that method. Because if the divine mind does not reveal the specific truth, then nothing can reveal it, or else it is spiritualism. It's no use to rely on psychology and say, why in psychology, usually they say this and that about a specific disease. Or you go back to the organ language where it says, well, if you have this disease, it's because it is the outcome of this kind of mentality and wrong mentality. Or you go to psychosomatic medicine, and again you go out from a wrong standpoint. Or you go out, what is even worse, you go out from your experience in the past, how Christian Science has worked and healed, and say, I already had many of these cases, I treat them again as I was treating them before. This is all wrong. This is all manipulation, it's all human manipulation, it's all speculation, it's all human belief. It isn't a revelation of the divine mind, it's not divine mind reading. No case is the same as the other. So whatever the case is, there is not a nice little book where you can look up if you have a tummy ache, then this is the idea. If you have heart trouble, then this is the idea. And if you have this and that, this is the idea. And make a nice little booklet, a recipe booklet for every kind of evil. Well, that's more or less the way usually over the last 100 years Christian Science was practiced. Whereas here we see that Mrs. Eddy says, you have always first to start with the divine mind and not with the problem. The problem doesn't tell us anything. That's the uncovering. The problem itself cannot tell what it is, what the cause is. We have to go back to the cause. So the only cause that can heal is divine mind. And so each time we just can go back and say, well, I don't know what is the matter with this case. I don't know what the specific error is and the specific truth is, and I'm not going to guess it. And I'm not going to rely on psychological reasoning. That I don't do. Nor on medical reasoning, nor on organ language. I don't do that. I say this is a completely new case that has no precedence, that is unique, the infinite never repeats itself, so I better have to start and sit back and become quiet and go out and contemplate from the standpoint of mind what mind knows and begin to ponder the relationship of these ideas, the calculus of ideas, the blending of ideas, and the reflection of ideas, until I'm so quiet within myself, so pure within myself, that soul can talk to me. Then soul sense illumines the human sense, and the right idea governing the case comes out and sticks out, as Chandoli used to say, like an iceberg, and it's unmistakable. It just sticks out, and you can't mistake it. And then, from that point on, one begins to handle its opposite and see that its opposite has no power, no action, no law, no force, that it is not guiding us, that it is no intelligence, no wisdom in it. And you go right through the seven synonymous terms, seeing that error has nothing on which to rely. And in this way, we dissolve the belief in error. And that is healing. So we see that this principle as love, Mrs. A speaks about the spiritual susceptibility, is actually that what we should train. If we are not spiritually susceptible, then we will never hear God speak. Then we will never hear the idea that comes to us into our consciousness very clear and says, this is the case. And so you can see very clearly that we should never reason in a case from the problem. The problem says, I'm this or that or the other. The problem says it. And the problem says it to the five physical senses. And the five physical senses say, yes, I've broken my arm. Yes, I have a lot of lack. I'm lacking this and that and the other thing. Well, that's the five physical senses that say it. And any reasoning from the five physical senses and from the argument of the body, we will never arrive at truth. We always will arrive at it if we put it away into the corner and go to the divine mind and see that if we go through that method, but then finally that truth will take care of that old body in the corner and will take care of him and show him that he is not sick but that he is healthy because he has no error that is real. Do you see that whole thing? And I remember when I saw this structure, I thought, oh golly, if I only could tell John Dorley and say, look here, what you have found out is the very same thing that Mrs. Eddy tells us how we should read a case, always through the divine mind, and no otherwise. Yes. That's the tone of principle. Now we come to the next tone of life, which is actually very short. It seems as if it would fall a little bit out of the rhythm of the whole thing, because it only shows the aspect of spiritualism and not the aspect of Christian Science. See, every one of those epitomes were always showing from the standpoint of Christian Science it's so and so, from the standpoint of spiritualism, it is so and so. All these epitomes have that comparison, except life, and I don't know why. So if I don't know why, I'm not worried about it. I wait until God tells me why it is so. And I take what is there. What is there is that she explains here that spiritualism brings forth its phenomena through mortal mentality. She takes up now the question, where do all these spiritualistic phenomena come from? Well, what is their cause? Where are they coming from? And her answer in one larger paragraph is just saying, well, they come from mortal mentality. Mortals really produce spiritualistic phenomena and are responsible for that. The text here reads like this: mortals evolve images of thought. So these images of thought, they don't come just from dear God Almighty. They come from quite a different source. They come from mortals. They evolve it. They are responsible. So you can see it's a tone of life, namely the fatherhood of life, who projects into being these images of thought. So we have a false sense of fatherhood here. Now these images of thought, of them she goes on and says, these may appear to the ignorant to be apparitions. So they appear as apparitions, but only to the ignorant, those who cannot see through, those who have not followed her explanation in the second part. They are ignorant, and then they feel that these apparitions are spiritualistic phenomena, that they are marvelous, they are miracles, that they are wonders, that they are extraordinary, etc., etc., when they are not at all extraordinary, that it is just, that one is just ignorant about the mechanism that exists between mortal thinking and its outcome, the manifestation of mortal thinking, and that it is really mortals that produce these apparitions. But they are mysterious only because it is unusual to see thoughts, though we can always feel their influence. This is interesting and very clear. Each one knows that he can feel thoughts. You go into a house and you say, there is no warmth in it. Why is there no warmth in it? There may be tables in it, and chairs in it, and pictures in it, and everything may be there but belongs to a house, and yet you say, oh, it's cold in here, it's a cold atmosphere, you say. Or you come into a group of people that are sitting around into a gathering of people, and you feel that something is stiff and not warm, or you feel it is warm and not stiff, you feel it. There is nothing that there is nothing material that says this is a nice atmosphere or this is not a nice atmosphere. But you can feel it. Why should you feel it? Why should we feel it? Where does it come from? Why should we feel? Feel is one physical sense out of the five physical senses. So why shouldn't we also see thoughts? See is just another aspect of the five physical senses as feeling. So she said, this should not be extraordinary, that we should see thoughts, apparition, if we also can feel thoughts. So it's just another culture, and if we have not culture to see thoughts, then we don't see them. But that is only because for a few thousand years in the Western countries, we are not trained to do it. We rejected it. But those cultures who have not rejected it and took it as natural, they can see it. Therefore, haunted houses, ghostly voices, unusual noises like poltergeists, and apparitions brought out in dark seances either involve feats of tricksters, or they are images and sounds evolved involuntarily by mortal mind. So anybody who has ever lived in a house where there is a poltergeist, you can't convince him that there is not a poltergeist. They know it. It's so clear and so definite that there is no question about it. They can, that's what happens here, they can hear unusual noises. You can go around and see if somebody's walking around. Nobody's walking around, but you hear them walking around. You hear how they open the locks of the door, how they open the door, how it makes a noise when it opens, or how they slam the door. You can even feel the wind when they pass by you. They always say it's a cold atmosphere that passes by you. And so they can feel or hear these apparitions. So there is feeling, seeing, hearing. All that is possible because they're all of the same nature. They are of the same nature of the five physical senses built involuntarily on mortal mind. Naturally, most Christian scientists who have never heard about it and have never had to deal with such cases, have never had it in their practice, to heal these people or to heal that ghost out of itself. They just laugh about it and say, this is ridiculous. But, you know, if people experience that, say, day after day, year after year, they really like to get rid of it because it's not quite so homely to be in such an atmosphere. And usually it is that one traces it back that there has been in that surrounding a very concentrated evil mortal mind experience happening, perhaps like a murder or like hate or like persecution or like curse and so on, that has stayed as an atmosphere in that house, and people who are receptive for it can take cognizance of it. So this is it's necessary to see, because why should such a problem be different than if somebody comes and says, I feel pain in my body, than to feel, I feel really the atmosphere of a poltergeist or of a ghost coming in constantly. What is the difference? You have to heal both cases. They're not one is different than the other one. Now, in countries like Europe that are older, where you had a whole old history, where also in these lonely valleys, where there is a lot of superstition still going on, the more you come into the side valleys, the more superstition there still is in daily life. There we have always these problems to solve. And it's not always easy to solve them, because we don't have to solve the one that calls for aid is free from it, but one also has to see that poltergeist finds a healing, because it's the unrest of mortal mind that you hear. It's the returning of always the same old belief, the curse, the hate, the fear that has gone with it, the disaster that has gone with it. One has to see that also those poltergeists find their true identity again, that they find their satisfaction within themselves, that there is no reality in mortal mind being dissatisfied, in mortal mind being at unrest, mortal mind constantly in a state of fear or hate or jealousy, that must be solved. So the practice is usually directed towards seeing that no identity, no true identity can lose its identity. Therefore, cannot lose its balance, its joy, its happiness. You see, they are not happy poltergeists that come. They are not at all happy. They are always... There is always a sense something has not been solved and resolved. And that's the way we have to go at it. So it's very important to have this paragraph on life, which says these are all images of mortal thought. And we have to free mortal thought of itself, of its ignorance, and see that a divine identity is always satisfied within itself. Seeing is no less a quality of physical sense than feeling. So we shouldn't make a difference. If we feel it's quite natural that we feel an atmosphere and say, well, it was a very bad atmosphere there, or there was a stiff atmosphere, or there was a warm atmosphere. Why should we feel it? Why not see it? It makes no difference. Then why it is more difficult to see a thought than to feel one, or to hear a thought, you see, than to feel one? Education alone determines the difference. It's just a matter of education. So we have to educate ourselves out of the belief that mortal mind produces images, that mortal mind, and you can go right through the seven, that mortal mind is dissatisfied with itself, that it can hate and fear, etc., etc. In reality, therefore, there is no difference between them. So tasting, smelling, thought is absolutely necessary. I bet you can reproduce the smell of something that perhaps 20 years ago was very uncomfortable in your nose. I can reproduce the whole smell and taste. The taste, say, perhaps I have been eating a bad beefsteak or so, and it was already a bit... And you ate it and you have the taste and you can reproduce it at once. You have just to think about it, because the impact, the impression was so strong, and you had to eat through it because you were a guest and couldn't say, I can't eat that stuff. And you had to eat it through, and you have the taste in it, and it's concentrated. You can recall it very easily. Very easily. And... Okay. So, can you see here how important this chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism is? Because really it instructs the blind, ignorant Christian scientists out of their belief that they never take into consideration that the human, mortal mind plane of things has effects, and that they can be detected again on the same level. If I have a very spiritual consciousness, I cannot detect them anymore, and it's not possible. Yes, so we come to the next subject of truth. Gosh, we have to hurry a little bit. I went off on a tangent. Here in truth, we see through conscious spiritualization, the end of error is brought about. That's what I just said, that if we are spiritual, then those impressions of mortal mind have no more an impact on us than we are free of them, so that we get absolutely free of all the phenomena of spiritualism, whatever that is, and get our freedom. How is this possible? The subtone of mind says, by welcoming new truth, belief consciousness out of its apathy into truth. So we have to lift our consciousness out of the spiritualistic beliefs. Here she says at portraits, landscape paintings, facsimile of penmanship, peculiarities of expression, recollected sentences, can all be taken from pictorial thought and memory, just as I said before. Seeing, feeling, hearing, everything, we can recall what we have been seeing 20, 30 years ago, we can recall it, and we can recall especially those that have made a great impression on us. Those that have not made an impression on us is no more easily to be recalled. We cannot recall what we have seen on the fifth day of our sixth year, and the sixth day of our fifth year, and the seventh day of the... We can only, so to say, recollect those pictures of landscape or wordings and what we have read, if it had made a great impression on us. So we can take it from pictorial thought and memory as readily as from objects cognizable by the senses. So she says there is no difference between the thought realm and the object realm. Mortal mind, namely, sees what it believes, and certainly, as certainly as it believes what it sees. So this is the great statement on here, that it says, well, we see what we believe and believe what we see. But that is not the truth of being. It feels, hears, and sees its own thoughts. That's a big point now. We see our own thoughts. If we are not on that level of mortal mind thinking, then we cannot see mortal mind's imagery, the pictures of mortal mind, the portraits, landscapes, and facsimile of penmanship we cannot see. The next point is spirit, namely pictures are mentally formed, that we have seen before, before the artist can convey them to canvas. So here it is that we can make mortal mind picture objectified. So it is it with the old material conceptions. So the moment we have material conceptions, we can materialize them. The artist has a mental conception, and it's up to him if he wants to materialize them, objectify them materially or not. He can say, no, I'm not going to paint that. He can say, I'm going to paint that, and can materialize it. Then we come to a tone of soul. Mind readers, we have to remember this would be mind with a small m. There's only a capital M because it's at the beginning of a sentence. So metaphysically, we must remind it's mind readers perceive these pictures of thought. So mind readers can catch them again. They copy or reproduce them. They can copy or reproduce them. You have soul that reproduces everything. So also on the level of human mind, they can reproduce it. That's all those mind readers that can sit down and reproduce in their thought, for instance, what I have had as experience in another place in other times, and they can reproduce it. They just look at mortal mind thought. A mortal mind atmosphere, and they can reproduce it. Even when they are lost to the memory of the mind in which they are discoverable. So a mortal mind reader, a good mortal mind reader, they can discover what I can't remember anymore from my life, so that they can read and say, well, I can see it. He can catch up, or it can catch the mortal mind atmosphere very easily. So, when we see the realm of mortal mind, we come to the point of principle. It is needless for the thought or for the person holding the transferred picture to be individually and consciously present. So she goes even a step further and says that is independent of people, of the person. That person must not even be present, and must not even be personally known to the mind reader, and you just tell him, read the past of this and this person, and they can catch the mental atmosphere of that person. That person must not even be personally known or present to the mind reader. Mind, small m. Though individuals have passed away, even if they have passed away, their mental environment remains to be discerned, described, and transmitted, so that they can also reproduce the atmosphere of somebody who is already no more here, has passed away, perhaps passed away 10 years, 100 years, and reproduce the mental atmosphere, because a mental atmosphere cannot get lost. So, to be discerned, described, and transmitted. Though bodies are leagues apart and their associations forgotten, their associations still float in the general atmosphere of the human mind. That's the point, that people are no factor in it, that it has only to do with mortal mind itself.